So Bible college was one of the places where I grew and learned quite a bit. It was post-secondary school. One of the biggest places I grew would probably be in sports. I played a lot of soccer there. I love soccer. But I had a really bad attitude in soccer. Like, I mean, I really wanted to win. I got easily frustrated. And this was all my first year, so it's a really bad first impression on some people. And so being remembered, there's a few people that, when I graduated, were like, wrote in my yearbook, were saying, "Hey, Pop the Top Jensen." I was like, great, that stuck all the years. And how it started was, it was in soccer. And so one day we were playing recreation soccer. We were just playing in the gym. And I was just playing around. I was fooling around. I was having fun until my team was like, "Andrew, you got to pick it up, man. You're being dominated. Like, these people are stealing your ball. You just got to be more aggressive." So I'm like, okay, I'll be aggressive. And so I was running alongside one of my friends who was on their team, and they're like, "Kim, like, I got to be aggressive." So I was like, wham! And I elbowed, well, I shouldered him in the jaw, and he went down, and he was, it was a bad idea. And so they were like, "Wow, you just flew off the handle. You totally be aggressive." And then it just kind of kept going as we did soccer, and really poor attitude. I'd really be aggressive. But after my first year, I'm like, I got to change that. And so by my fourth year, when I was playing soccer, I was a lot better, a lot better attitude. I didn't necessarily care much about winning. Was how I played the game. It took years, but the name stuck, and people remember me, and they're like, "Hey, Pop the Top Jensen." I'm like, "Ah, I'm trying to get past that." So, how would you like to be remembered is the question, and sadly, that's how some people remember me. Like, it's jokingly now, but they still remember it, and so it's kind of not necessarily a very good one. But when I think about being remembered, I think of the word legacy. And oddly enough, when I think about legacy, I think of some movies I've seen that involve school. Universities and colleges, some of them are really intense on legacy. It's like, "Oh man, you're the third generation legacy. Your grandparents were here, and your dad was here, and now it's you. It's so awesome." And so that's what I think about when I think about being remembered. It's leaving a legacy for people. And so I looked up the different definitions for legacy, and of course the first one is law, which is a gift of property, especially personal property, such as money, passed down, and so pretty much an inheritance. Things that you've built up, to pass down, built up in your life, to be remembered by. So I guess when people pass away, you hear about the will, and some people get sums of money, some people get property, some people get... Sometimes I think about the pocket watch. You kind of hear about the famous pocket watch. "Your grandfather had this, and now I pass it on to you." It's like, "Oh, yeah, I got the pocket watch." That's what I kind of think about when they think about inheritance. And the number two is anything handed down from the past. And so when I think about that, yeah, I think about words. Words of wisdom. Parents probably do that regularly, trying to enforce that wisdom into your kids so that they, you know, get a little better as they grow up. And so I think about that, or I think about work ethic. My dad is a very hardworking man, and I strive to have a work ethic like him. He did anything he could to provide for his family, and that's what I would love to do. And of course, the third one is what I mentioned before. It's an applicant to or a student at a school that is attended by or was attended by his or her parent, and so, as I mentioned, a legacy. So here's the question that I mentioned before is, and you guys can sit on this because this is going to be about another 2 weeks of this. But the question is, what are you guys going to be remembered for? We heard on the screen, there's some stuff, good smiles. One guy's like, "My hat." I was like, okay, I guess. I mean, if you have the coolest hat in the world, people are going to remember you for as being a great father or mother. And all these things, being joyful, being compassionate, being loving. And so, that's what I heard when I talked to people or when I watched different videos about the subject. That's what I got. People were like, "I'm remembered as someone who showed love," or someone that had sweet tattoos was one of them. Someone who made connections with people, or someone who was a great writer, or maybe someone who was a leader in a community that made a big difference. But some people have also come to the realization that maybe they won't be remembered. They have done nothing great in their own eyes, and they think they'll fade into the nothingness of never being remembered. Which is a sad realization when you stop to think about it, because as people, we work hard to provide for our families, to make it through the years with things that we need. We build relationships, and we work hard to keep them. We all work towards something, and when we look back, we can all see our hard work. And I mean, if you have nothing to show for that, it's kind of a sad conclusion of one's life. And I'm sure that all of us can look back and pinpoint certain areas where we have worked really hard to achieve something. Or maybe we still are working towards that achievement. So here's another question. Does it have to be something physical you accomplish that people will remember you for? Have you ever thought that if you had just done something differently with your life, you'd be going in a different direction than you are now? Or I would have not had faced those certain problems if I had just done a little better in that one area. We live in a country where we have multiple choices to do multiple different things with our lives, and even when we settle down with a career, we have a chance to rewrite our lives and pick a new career. The options are numerous. I mean, if we think about, have you guys ever gone to the city, or maybe even here in town, after church on Sunday, and you're just like, man, we gotta go out to eat somewhere. And then you're all like, well, let's go here. Well, what about here? No. This place is a lot better. And so you finally pick your choice, and then afterwards you're like, maybe you shouldn't have picked that place. And then next Sunday you have another choice to pick. Or it's a different one, but we have many different kinds of toothpaste. I mean, at one point probably it was just baking soda and something else that people use, but now we have like, what, Sensodyne, Crest, Aquafresh, and so on with like sensitivity, with better fresh breath, long lasting, 24 hours, so on. So many different choices. And of course, we have different career choices. And so to be remembered gets a little bit harder to pick and choose what you want people to remember you for just because we have all these different choices. The majority of anxiety trying to figure out what college to go to or what career to go into is from the idea that there are so many out there and that you may pick the wrong one and no one is there to point out the best one or make the decision for you. At one point in this world, you knew what you were going to do. At one point, people were like, yeah, I'm going to work on the family farm, just like my dad and my granddad did. And that's what their decision was. But now, as you go through the last year of high school, knowing that there are thousands of possible careers out there, you may not be very good at all of them, but maybe five of them stand out, but that's still five possible choices to pick from. And if you pick the wrong one, you won't be happy. And you won't succeed as well as you would have if you picked the right career. Therefore, you probably will fade into the background and not be remembered for very much because you picked the wrong thing. That's pretty depressing. I wrote this and found this pretty depressing. So let's say you do make the right career choice. It does not stop the anxiety or the great question of what if? What if I didn't pick the right career? Take into consideration the idea of the midlife crisis. What if I'd chosen some other career or some other wife or husband or chosen to spend more time with my kids instead of working? The fact is that there's not enough time left to redo any of those decisions that you've made, which triggers the crisis. And all of it comes back to the elusive nature of happiness. You picked X because you thought it would make you happy, but you're not happy. So you probably should have picked Y instead. Then you would have been a lot more happier. But as the saying goes, the grass is green on the other side until you hit the other side and realize where you were was greener, and then it's a back and forth, nonstop thing. Which means the pressure is really on you to make the next decision of your life the right one. Because happiness is right over the next hill, and you better pick it, otherwise you're not going to be happy. So, did you make the right decision? Do you think that if you did something different in your choices, do you be remembered for something greater or something more satisfying? But I want to stop to clarify something. I'm not saying that being remembered for being nice, a nice person, or having a great personality, or you have a beautiful smile, or you light up the room when you walk into it, is a bad thing. I'm just wanting to ask the question, what will you be remembered for as its worthiness for eternity? Did you love because God first loved you, and you have no inexplicable reasons you have to share this love because his love is so fulfilling? Or did you have joy and want to pass it to others because Jesus has a joy, a never-ending joy that's in you, and you're so happy to share with people? Or do you have peace because God has a peace beyond all understanding, and you just have to share this with someone who's hurting? So I guess it comes down to kind of what are your motives behind it. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 4 to 7 says, there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit distributes them. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but in all of them and in everyone, it is the same God at work. Now to each one, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good. The thing is, God can use you in any situation that you are in. If you think that you picked the wrong career at this moment, God can still use you. If you think you missed out on a volunteer position, God can still use you and work in you. So it comes down to, are you doing things for the glory of God, or are you doing it for the benefit of yourself? And so we're going to turn to the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is where we're going to spend the majority of our time. And sometimes Nehemiah can be overlooked by some people, considering how low of a pool of success he was in some people's minds. If you compare him to, say, Moses or Joshua, David, and so on, he falls kind of at the bottom of the ladder. Sometimes the only thing that people know Nehemiah for is that he was supposedly the shortest man in the Bible by the really, really bad pun, Nehemiah. Really bad. Really bad, but some people only know that. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about him. So Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king Artaxerxes. Now, before you go, oh, great, a cupbearer, that's great. I remember Joseph having a cupbearer, and, you know, he didn't do the greatest thing, so what makes him so good? So yes, a cupbearer brings wine and food to the king. But at the same time, it was a position of great power, because the king does not just pick anyone to test his food or drinks. I mean, if you just let anyone walk in, go, yeah, here's my application, and you go, oh, well, let's just hire you, give you a trial run, the trial run could end in your death. So, I mean, the king doesn't just pick anyone. And so he picks Nehemiah. So the cupbearer to the king is an escort of the monarch at meals. The cupbearer has a unique advantage to petition the king. He's the opportunity to talk to the king about problems that are not brought up by the other officials. It's almost like best friend talk, in a way. Not only did the king owe him his life because he would taste the food or drink first, it's that he was putting his own life at risk, but he was also a close confidant. And so he grew closer to the king. And so why is it important to know that he was a cupbearer and a close confidant to the king? And why is Nehemiah important to what do you want to be remembered for? It begins here. So Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah heard of distress, and he prayed. So the background of Nehemiah is that Israel had been taken captive by the Babylonians about 100 years earlier. So that means that Nebuchadnezzar was alive, and as we read in Daniel, King Darius of the Persians had come and conquered the Babylonians. So that Persia was now in control. So sometime later, King Cyrus had made a decree that the Jews were able to go back to their homeland. They were set free, and that the captive 70-plus years were now over, just as God has said. Not all the Jews left to go home, though. Many had made a life in the Persian cities. Some were born there, and that's what they knew. They didn't necessarily know about Jerusalem. So Nehemiah had chosen to stay behind, and whether that was because he was happy in the place he was in, the thing is, he still knew about his heritage. He still knew about his people. He still prayed to God and worshiped him. So a lot of his stuff was not lost. He was in the right place. And that's where he was going to stay. So Nehemiah chapter 1. I'm going to give you my version of it. But Nehemiah chapter 1, Nehemiah is going about his day. He's just had a meal with the king. Things. He's the greatest day ever. He got almost a free meal. He got to try the food, got to sit with the king, got to make some jokes, maybe heard all the inside news, and he's like, man, this is a pretty sweet gig I got going on here. Like, all these people have left, and they're able to leave. That's good. I like what I have here. And so after he's like, hey, king, I'll see you later, and he walks out the doors after lunch, and he's like, whew, this is so good. And as he's walking down the corridors, he hears his brother, I think his brother... What was it? Did someone say it? Yeah, that's it. Hanani, oh, something like that. Comes busting in the doors and like, whoa, I haven't seen you in like a couple months or years. And he busts in the doors. He's out of breath and the guards kind of stop him, but he pushes through and he grabs onto Nehemiah's coat and he says, Nehemiah, there's something going on. Our land is in distress. Our people are constantly being bombarded by these people of the outsiders. Our walls are destroyed. Our gates are burned. There's not a lot of stuff protecting us. And Nehemiah is like in shock, and he's like, whoa, are you serious? Like, I didn't know it was that bad. Like, I know that 100 years ago, you know, there was a siege and, you know, things were destroyed, but I can't believe nothing's been rebuilt yet. And so he hears this, and he says, I have to have some time alone. And so he walks away, and he breaks down, and he cries. And the first thing he does is he turns to God. And he talks to God, and he's like, why is this going on? I know you hear us. I know that you're with us. But at the same time, why is the city, why is the chosen people of you in ruins and these people in distress? And so he cries out to God. And so he prays this in Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 6 to 11. It says, let your ear now be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, which I am praying before you now. Day and night, on behalf of the sons of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which have sinned against you. I and my father's house have sinned. You have acted very corruptly. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the ordinances which you commanded your servant Moses. Remember the word which you commanded your servant Moses, saying, if you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the people. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though those of you who have been scattered were in the most remote parts of the heavens, I will gather them from there, and I will bring them to the place where I have chosen to cause my name to dwell. They are your servants and your people, whom you redeemed by your great power and your strong hand. O Lord, I beseech you, may your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants, you who delight to revere your name, and make your servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man. It's a pretty intense prayer. Nehemiah knew his past. He knew that his people were scattered because they had done wrong in the eyes of the Lord. But he also knew that God says, one day I will bring you back together. And so at this point, when the Persians, when King Darius said, you guys go home, get out of here, go back home, it was fulfillment of what God had said. He says, I'll bring you guys back. You've been scattered, but I'll bring you back. And so Nehemiah knew that. But at the same time, when God has said that, he's like, why are they in distress? If you've brought them back from your word, I don't understand this. But Nehemiah, he prayed. The very first thing that he did when he heard about the distress that his people were in, he prayed. I think this is something very key to being remembered, or what you'll be remembered for. He not only prayed when there was something rough going on, but he prayed all the time in any situation. And when we read on, we'll discover that Nehemiah will continue to pray for guidance and courage and more. Now, why is this important? Because when we pray to God, we are looking for guidance. We're looking for God to intervene. We're looking for God to move. When someone sees someone praying in all circumstances at all times, it becomes something remembered. Some of the most influential people that I know and have the privilege to be under have been men of prayer, women of prayer. In every circumstance, happy, bad, sad, mad, everything, they're praying to God. And that's something that has stuck out. It is also a chance to listen and hear from God on different areas where you think you should act. This comes down to volunteering, job searching, college applying, and more. Many times we are quick to listen to our own hearts that tells us, you got enough on your plate, you're good. And you think about all the things and you try to justify it. You try to justify not doing something with everything else that you've done. When we do that, we miss the kingdom building opportunities. There could be something that God is calling you to do, a place where you'll be key to one person or more, a place where God will move if only you say something, and a place where you too will grow in God and grow in your skills. So Nehemiah knew what he had to do. Chapter 1, verse 11 says, O Lord, I beseech you, may your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and the prayer of your servants who delight to revere your name, and make your servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man. And it says, now is a cupbearer to the king. And so if we connect the dots there, compassion before this man is the king. And so Nehemiah, the first thing he did was pray. And then the second thing is Nehemiah acted on his prayer. Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 to 5 says, and it came about in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence, so the king said to me, why is your face sad? Though you are not sick, this is nothing but sadness of the heart. Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" And so I prayed to the God of heaven. I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it." So this is something pretty crazy going on. It's important to tell the date. It says about the month of Nisan. That is about March or April. And so it's been about 4 months since he's initially heard that Jerusalem has no walls and that his people are not safe. And it's important because it shows that he waited and he prayed 4 months. And although he had no inclination to move within those 4 months, he still knew that he had to do something and that he was supposed to do something. And so he's waiting for God. This was still a burden on his heart, and he knew that he had to act sooner than later. And so he knew he had to ask the king for permission to leave and with possible resources. So I ask you, have you ever had that little notion, the little voice telling you that you should be doing something? There is a book written by Claire de Graaff called The 10-Second Rule. The basic outline of the book is that we have 10 seconds to act on a notion or respond to the voice inside of us. Otherwise, it leaves us, and we don't act upon it, and we miss out. It's easy to overthink things when you're suddenly presented with a person in need. There are numerous stories about people who walk by others with car trouble in parking lots or highways. So let's take the parking lot, for example. You're walking by this, it could be a man or woman walking, and they have their hood up, and they're on their cell phone, so you walk by, and you're like, "Cell phone, that's noted. Probably calling for help. Therefore, I can keep going to my car, and I don't have to be bothered with this." And as you're walking by, you see another gentleman or a person walk up and go, "Hey, do you need a boost? Can I do something to help?" And you're like, "Ugh." And the voice inside you says, "Way to go, you dope. I told you to move on it." And you're like, "Ugh." And then you kind of regret it for a little bit, but then it kind of passes. And then it happens again in some other situation. Say, like, have you ever like been sitting somewhere, like in a park or sitting in a mall and watching, and like a bag falls like down, I don't know, quite a ways down. You're kind of watching, you're like, a bag falls, and people are scrambling to pick up things, and their kids are kind of wandering away, and you're like, "I should probably help, but I'm comfy. I should really help. I'm just going to look this way so I don't have to..." Okay, they're good? All right. So then you don't help, and then the notion is like, "Oh, man, you could act on that. Like, you could have been a witness. Man, it would have been so good, but you missed out again." It's like, oh, that makes you feel so good inside. But I mean, if you get those notions, I mean, you have to use caution when you get those notions. But if you have a reasonable, sure feeling, then I think you should act on it. And I'm pretty sure when God tells you something, he's pretty sure on what you need to act on. But the sad thing is, sometimes we're looking for the bigger sign from God. We're waiting, we're like, okay, we get these little things, but that's not waiting for God. I'm waiting for you to act big. It's going to be awesome. But when we're waiting for the big sign, sometimes it's still an inconvenience to follow Jesus, because even when we get the big sign, we sometimes tend to look the other way. So, I mean, if we're missing out on the small things, then I think we'll miss out on the big things. So Nehemiah was waiting for God to tell him when to move. He was waiting for the big sign, but he was also waiting for the 10-second rule, the little sign to act now. 4 months after hearing the news, the time was now. He needed to talk to the king. Because of the sad state that Israel was in, it was taking a toll on Nehemiah's emotions, and he was downright sad because his people were suffering. And here he was in the presence of the king with a good job, healthy life, and safe behind the walls of Persia. The king noticed that he was sad. The bad thing about being sad is you're sad. The worst thing about being sad in the presence of the king, well, you're sad, but you also die. The king had an image to keep, and everyone in his court, everyone in the presence of him should be happy. And that means that the king is doing a good job, his reign is great, everyone loves him, and if you're sad, it shows bad on the king. And so this was the chance that Nehemiah was taking that possibly he was going to lose his head if he said something. So I can understand why Nehemiah was trying to hide his emotions. He was trying, maybe not try to talk to the king, because the chance of dying, I mean, I don't think there's too much worse than dying, to be honest. You're dead. And so he didn't want to show up, but the king noticed this. And so the king, luckily, didn't say, "Hey, guards, let's kill him." He goes, "Nehemiah, you're like the guy I've chosen. I've come to really enjoy you. We've had these little talks and stuff. What's wrong with you? I mean, like, this is more than just like a bump or a scrape or something wrong with physically. This is from the heart." And so Nehemiah takes the chance, and he tells the king and asks the king for help. But before he does that, he sends up a quick prayer. So Artaxerxes listens, and to Nehemiah's surprise, he's not going to kill him. He's willing to hear more. And in Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 3 to 4, it says, "I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lie desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire? Then the king said to me, 'What would you request?' And so I prayed to the God of heaven." The king sympathized with what Nehemiah had to say. Artaxerxes knew the importance of protecting family tombs and preservation of one's heritage. And so when Nehemiah said, "Hey, the place where my father's family's tombs are not protected anymore," Artaxerxes perked up. He's like, "Oh, I know that because I got a few back there being protected really good behind these walls." And so he listened. And in no doubt that God was working in this moment. And of course, the king asked, "Is there any way to help?" Nehemiah heard the voice when it came. He had the courage to step forward, knowing that God was going to move. It's super scary to think about the possible consequences, the possible scenarios. But when we know that God is asking us to move, we have the hope that he is going before us and the knowledge that it's going to work out for his glory. I think I'd rather be remembered for someone who took that step forward for God and seeing God move rather than staying comfortable on my bench or my bed and going, "I'll do it next time," and missing out on such a great opportunity. So number three on being remembered is Nehemiah went. He went back to Judah knowing that God was going forward. So Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 6 to 10 says, "Then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, 'How long will your journey be, and when will you return?' So it pleased the king to send me and gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, 'If it please the king, let letters be given for me to the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go.' And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. Then I was to the governors of the provinces beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them, and someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel." To be remembered, you need to take the step forward to be the servant of Christ, to step into the unknown knowing that God is going to be there for you. Nehemiah did this. Once he got permission from the king to go back to Israel and was given safe passage and material to rebuild what was needed, he went. But I think Nehemiah would have gone regardless if the king had given him letters and military people to follow him and wood from his personal forest. Because Nehemiah knew that God was calling him there. And if God's calling, he's going to provide one way or another. So the question is again, how would you like to be remembered? Would you like to be remembered as someone who stepped into the unknown for God with faith that he's going to complete what he says and he is going to do. However, the unknown is scary. And don't let the however stop you from doing this, because anything stepping out is scary. But God is in the unknown, and that makes it feel a little better. It is scary when you feel called to leave the town that you grew up in. It's scary to leave the family behind to pursue what God has for you. It is scary applying for a new job that is elsewhere, or a new job in general can be scary. It can be scary going to a new school, college, or university. But if God has called you there, then it is where you are to be. And that was something when I went to Nippon Bible College, that was something that my mom continually told me when I had small little doubts. I mean, I was about 5 hours away from home, so like it wasn't super bad. I could go home on weekends, but it was a new school, new people, new everything, and it's scary. But my mom constantly told me, it's like, I've been praying for the right school for you ever since you've decided that that's what you wanted to do, and I have no doubt in my mind that God has called you here. And so you go ahead, God's there with you, God has called you there, he's going to make it work. And it did. It really worked. The initial fear in anything is scary. I mean, leaving Regen and coming here, love you guys now, but when I first stood in front of you guys giving a little bit about myself, it was scary. I'm pretty sure I looked at the floor the entire time or something. And it's scary because we're leaving behind close families. And that goes with anyone here, to be honest. I mean, a lot of you have settled down, but the younger people going to school, going to university, those who are looking for different career choices, sadly, a lot of career choices are not in Wainwright, and so we have to watch them leave. But we just hope for more to come in and do the same thing. But as you guys go out, it's scary. But knowing that God has called you into a certain area, or just knowing that God's going to be there, makes it that much better. And I like to think that looking back to be remembered on our lives is that, like I said, taking a step forward. Whether it is a small step or a big step, whether we take that step. God has given you the gifts and talents. And I think the one way to expand those, to grow those, is to leave. I mean, if I got a position in Regina, I don't think I would have grown as much as I have so far. I had to take that step out for my talents to grow, to be able to preach a little better, to be able to serve the youth a little better, to be able to interact with people a little better. Had to get out of my comfort zone. And I'm not saying that's for everyone. People are called to different areas, but that's just one area that I've seen is to step out, and it's scary. But our talents and our gifts grow. We become stronger as individuals, but the really cool part, the really amazing part is that we grow in God, and we grow with the ability to know that God is going to be with us the next time we have to step forward, the next time that we have to take a big step into the scariness of stuff, that God is going to be there, and we know, we look back and go, hey, it turned out all right. You know, I didn't mess up too bad. People still love me. It worked out, and God's still working on me. That's the beauty of it, that God still works on us wherever we are. So it means that trusting that God is actually doing good in our lives to make us more confident in trusting him for the future. And so the worship team can come up. I'm going to be complete after this. Do you want to be remembered for listening to the voice, for stepping out, or do you want to look back on your life and go, I really wish I stood out or I stepped out in that moment rather than sitting on the bench and watching a person trying to pick up all their spilled purchases of the day while the kids are running amok? I really wish I stepped forward and did something. That small little thing could have made a really big difference. Do you want to be known for someone who listened to the 10-second gap where God's telling you to do something, and then when the bigger thing came, you listened? Or do you want to be someone who just takes it easy, stays in the comfort zone, sits back? So how do you want to be remembered? We'll continue this next week. It'll be awesome.